Welcome to the Education Marketing Leader Podcast with Chris Raposo. If you're looking to dive into the latest industry insights, draw inspiration from education success stories, or just want to sharpen your marketing skills, you're in the right place. Here, we bring you a diverse range of voices from experts and leaders in the field, offering you a unique blend of professional development and practical strategies. Whether you want to understand your audience better, stay updated with the latest tech trends in marketing, or expand your professional network, we've got you covered. So while you're driving on your morning commute or winding down after a busy day, let's explore the dynamic world of education marketing together.
Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Education Marketing Leader with Chris Raposo. Today, my guest is joining me from the great state of California. His name is Scott Klein, Dr. Scott Klein, that is. He is the founder of Scott Klein Consulting, LLC, executive in residence at Compass Sonar, and the former SVP of Enrollment Management and Auxiliary Services at California College of the Arts. Scott, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Chris, for having me. Glad to be here.
Scott is also a member of the Education Marketing Leader Book Club, so we're going to have a lot of good conversation together. He's also super active on LinkedIn, and one of his recent LinkedIn posts that got quite a bit of traction was titled, "The Real Crisis in Higher Ed, Institutions Discouraging Staff on Social Media," and that is what the interview will be all about today. So, Scott, tell me a little bit about the discouragement of staff from posting at their work on social media. Why is that an issue? Why is this so critical to address in the current higher ed landscape?
Yeah, I think there are two things. One, institutions are under incredible pressures right now. The trust in higher education is at an all-time low, arguably, on a number of different surveys that have been published recently. And then in response to that, there have been moments where staff members or faculty members or students have posted something on social media that have been taken either out of context or not so out of context. And the reaction to that from an institutional perspective is to close down those doors. And they've been doing it in a few different ways. And it's not all institutions. But a number that I've seen and talked to a number of colleagues is they're closing down the doors of saying, oh, you can't post during your work hours unless it's specifically for your job. Or you can post, but you have to make sure that it's very clear that you're posting on behalf of yourself and not as the institution. And so I've seen a lot of policies rolled out that have been very more restrictive during this time period of this hypersensitivity, which is without doubt, there are risks out there in the world. But the reaction to that is staff, instead of being engaged out there and really being able to promote and authentically talk about their work and their institutions, more in the default then becomes, I'm not going to talk about it at all. And for me, that's very concerning in this day and age.
Yeah, you mentioned the research report. And I think during the post that I earlier mentioned, you talked about a Compass Sonar research that shows that the trust in higher ed is at an all-time low. Now, why do you think, first of all, the trust is at an all-time low? I know if you have a lot of seasoned higher ed folks on the line and listening, they know the answer to that. But how can that be combated at all-time low trust with students or staffers being active on social media, talking about the institution from a first person's perspective?
Yeah, I think without a doubt, we all know that the context of higher education is under big pressures these days, from conversations about the return on investment, how much that education is worth, the value of that, and why students are going. And they're asking all these questions. They're the right questions. They're the questions that all students and families should be asking about the institution, about the investment, both from a money, a time, an energy perspective, should be putting into the institution. And so those pressures are real, and we can't dismiss them, and we shouldn't just think, oh, we need to, quote unquote, show that we're better in this world as institutions of higher education, they'll believe us. You know, and at the same time, the context is there's generally lots of distrust out there in the society today. And that doesn't apply just to higher education. You see it across the spectrum here. And what we're seeing then is institutions really needing to authentically engage with their communities. That could be their local community that they're serving, that could be their national or even their international communities, and the different complexities that come with those communities. And so what they're looking for is that authenticity. And that doesn't come, you know, marketing is important, branding is important, important. All those usual things and tools that we've had from a marketing perspective still apply to these day, but really what they're looking for is that authenticity. They're looking for what's next, the thing that comes after the first point of conversation or what they're having on their campus tour or what they're seeing on social media. There's this lens now out there, for better or worse, you know, and I might argue that it's for the worse, but there's the lack of trust. And what we're looking for and what we're seeing is ways to really engage, and that's the Campus Sonar work, of seeing that engagement of people becoming really authentic and being able to ask those questions and be able to see through and get to that next question, the question after that. And I think that's the path forward for institutions to regain and rebuild that trust. We can argue until we're blue in the face that it's not the right thing or that institutions are unfairly being maligned by this. But it's a reality that we're currently working in, and that's the reality that we have to then tackle, and how do we progress from there?
I did notice, because I work as a marketer on the vendor side for higher education, and I manage the Hannon Hill company LinkedIn page, for example. Mm-hmm. So when I post on the LinkedIn page, I rarely get any traction because traditionally people don't really interact with companies unless they're Nike or Adidas or Apple, that I've noticed. But if I mention something that's similar to the topic that I posted on the company page on my personal page, that it at least double the engagement on that post. It's just because people know me and people associate with me with Hannon Hill, and there's a bigger trust there. And they feel like they can comment on my post, and they get an authentic response back instead of some generic curated response from a company, because you know everybody's under a microscope. So if I comment at Hannon Hill, I got to make sure that I keep it very much PC, that nobody gets offended by whatever I say. But let's talk about how staff stories contribute to the sense of authenticity and connection. So let's say somebody goes on a campus tour, for example, meets with an admissions counselor. What would be the way for them to continue the conversation? Would they hand out a business card that had their LinkedIn or their Instagram on there so they can follow, you know, prospective students and parents can follow that, that staffer? Or what is your suggestion there?
Yeah, and I don't think that every staff member on campus, if they're not comfortable with this or they have no idea what they're doing, should just be thrown out there willy-nilly, and that everybody should be following their, you know, particularly their personal Instagram accounts, where all they're doing is posting pictures of their food and their families. That's not the idea here. But for the people who are really wanting to both get the tools, the training, and be able to put out there in that, when I talk about that third space, kind of where there's the truly, truly personal, where it's your family, it's your parents, you're posting your kids' photos, and all they want to see is your family there. And then there's the really, really, really professional, like, you know, Chris and I get our jackets on, our ties on, and we're very professional PR and marketing people out there. But then we have that third space where people can be both human, you know, and you talked about that earlier, that human connection that people are really wanting for, and professionals, professional humans. Go figure. In this day and age, we're all humans and we're also professionals. Like, how do we create more of that third space where you can have these conversations, engage, and be authentic? And that comes from talking about your day-to-day. You know, what does it look like to be an admissions counselor, either on campus or on the road? You know, and it doesn't have to be in the fancy, flashy videos. There's a time and place for that, but just really understanding who you are as a human. Because I think what people are looking for in this case of an admissions counselor is, what is it? Why are you working here? You know, what does it make you get up every single day and go for your job? There are the good days and there are the bad days. Everybody knows that. It's not like it's a secret. You don't have to have all the flash. And people's response these days to all the flash is like, that's probably not true, which in reality has never been the truth. And really what they're looking for is the good and the bad. It doesn't have to be horrible. You're not having to rag on your institution. Nobody's looking for that either. But you're really going to say, hey, you know, I had like 20 meetings today or something like that. And I was tired at the end of the day. Everybody's got to understand that. But you also got to meet with some amazing students who are looking, in my case, when I was working at an art school, like you got to see all their art every single day. You got to walk the halls. Like that's really what they're looking for. And I think it gives them a sense of what it's actually going to be like if they're, in this case, being a student, walking through your campus. You know they're going to have a good day. They know they're going to have a bad day. You know, let's stop pretending like it and let's create these third phase spaces for staff and faculty to be their authentic professional selves.
That's right. Yeah, I see a lot of the day in the life videos coming up on LinkedIn of various marketers and professionals. So some people riff on it. I saw one the other day. It was super hilarious. It was a day in the life of an unemployed B2B marketer, something like that, you know. So funny, because you see it, at first you see it, it's like, oh, this is kind of cool, and then you see it all the time, you're like, holy cow, you know, should I be doing this? Am I missing out? But, you know, like you said, some people have a knack for it and they want to do it, and others don't, and you just have to be respectful on that. Some people like to be on camera, other people like to write original research of stuff they read or report on things, you know. So everybody has their niche, and some people are better at it than others, but you know, you can always be trained. Talking about this topic a little bit more, many institutions are adopting restrictive social media policies for staff, but I did talk to someone, his name is Rob Clark, he is a social media influencer of That Tall Family, but he's also a marketer at a university, Greenville University out of, I think it's Ohio or Illinois, one of the two states. But he told me about when he partners with companies for his personal brand, he never takes a job where they give him a script, where it's completely scripted because it doesn't come over authentic. So what is some of the risks involved when institutions trying to curate social media personalities on staff too much? You know, what are some of the risks in that approach, and what might be missed by not empowering them to be their authentic self?
Yeah, I think, I mean, one you talked about earlier is the tools. You said all these things are trainable. It's not like somehow charisma, you know, getting over the fear of talking on camera and then having to listen to yourself afterwards. That's terrifying. I'm still terrified to this day. You know, we'll see if I actually listen to this podcast afterwards. Just kidding. Just to avoid my own voice. But like, it's all about the training. It's all about the tools and finding that comfort level. And then people being able to find their own selves in those different things. If they love writing, let them write. You know, have them posting on LinkedIn. Encourage them. You know, provide them the time and space and the tools to support them to do so. You know, and also give them the training about what to avoid. Like, if you're tired and you just saw something on the news that made you really angry as a human, maybe this is the time to put your phone down and don't post that. You know, it doesn't take those feelings away. It doesn't take your authentic self away, but that's not the time to be posting that. And that applies to anything that you're doing in your work. Would you be writing your emails when you're really angry? You know, remember everybody says, you know, draft that email that night and then sleep on it before you send it maybe to your boss or 100 of your colleagues. Same thing applies to social media. And they really just need the tools and the training and support from institutions to be able to guide them, because they don't know. And if they don't know and they're not told and then get in trouble, why are we as institutions going to be the ones to wag our finger at them in many ways? You know, the other things that institutions really need to start thinking about is like, what does this mean for, and not really to get over the fear of like, well, if we have our employees posting on LinkedIn or something like that, they might be looking for a job. And it's like that fear of like, oh, your people are so good, they're looking for a job. And so your idea is to tell them not to post on LinkedIn so they won't look for a job. I'm like, they're going to look for a job no matter what. And you're not getting that best and brightest out of it. My thing when I was running a team and a division was I wanted people to talk. I wanted people to look out there in the world and see, you know, what opportunities there were. And if they stayed at the institution, great. If they didn't, my ultimate goal was that they would hire me someday for a job or something like that. So that was the small world that I worked in. And that's the mindset that I always took this. And institutions need to just, frankly, get over it. I've heard from so many people where they've heard like, oh, I posted on LinkedIn. It's like showing up to the office and wearing a tie or something like that. And people are like, oh, are you interviewing? I'm like, come on, people. Like, you're just posting on the internet. It's not like you're looking for a job every single day. Yeah. And the other thing for an institution to think about next is like, what does it mean to have individuals representing your institution? And they might change. They might go to a different institution, and that's fine. But how do you continue that conversation? How do you build that next cohort of, you know, either staff or faculty to continue that building? So you have an entire team doing this and less individuals. And it really comes down to that team, that volume of those authentic voices versus any one influencer. We see this a lot at the presidential level, where it's like, if you really curate a really great presidential voice, and that's important, I think. It's really important these days. But then it's in the voice of that president as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. A lot of nuggets in that segment. First of all, if you hate your voice when you record audio or a video, I did too. I'm 100 episodes in with the podcast. It doesn't bother me anymore. The more you do it, the easier it gets. Also, the other thing that you said about writing angry emails, Sometimes I write angry emails and I put it in a ChatGPT and I say, make it sound more professional. You know, that helps too. And then the other thing is about posting on LinkedIn is there's such a branding aspect to it for the institution, for your company. I had a lot of people reach out to me and said, I cannot imagine Hand and Hill without thinking Chris Raposo.
Mm.
You know, so there's an association there that that directly benefits the company. It's like Dave Kibbles and Ology, or it's like Jamie Hunt and Old Dominion, you know, back in the day, mm-hmm. you know, when they were like the podcast hosts. You associated these people with their institution. They were one and the same, and in a positive or in a negative way. But anyways, you're talking about training and tools. What are some of the trainings and tools that you suggest institution could utilize to help their or empower their staffers?
Yeah, the first thing I want to acknowledge is most staff, particularly if you're talking about like the marketing, the communication team, by and large, that institutions are probably understaffed. You know, we see it every single day. There's a few exceptions out there, but by and large, there's way too many things for marketing and communications team to do. And the real key to this is, how do you scale this? It's not just about having one Chris or one Scott, you know, carrying the brand of an institution. It's how do you have 100 Chris's or 100 Scott's at your institution? And so for me, it's really about how do you build tool sets that can be delivered and given to people as, you know, training. So this could be asynchronous trainings, you know, around safety and how to post and what not to post. And certainly you have brand guidelines. How do you build that and scale that and be able to deliver that to a wide audience at your institution? And we haven't even talked about faculty or students that we could be talking about next. But how do you build a tool set that's scalable to be able to build this out? Like, how do you do this through video form? How do they do this through trainings? You know, how do you link out to all those other resources that exist on like YouTube about like, you know, how do you position yourself as an individual on LinkedIn, or how do you do it on Instagram or TikTok or whatever the version is? Like, how do you use all those other tools out there? And there's certainly a role and a place for like key, you know, consultants or, you know, experts in this field. If you don't have it in-house, to really bring those people in to do either virtual trainings or in-person sessions, or help you craft that if you're just starting from new and you're like, I don't even know where to start, you know? And so I think bringing in that whole plethora of the world and the connected people that we have in contact with is key to building a scale. So we have 100 Chris's or 100 Scott's talking about an institution versus, you know, one or two, which it's like providing training and support. There'll be key voices, you know, at institutions that have like presidents, provosts that might need key support and investment without a doubt, because they play such a key and pivotal role for the institution. But by and large, a lot of this can be done by just providing the tools and encouraging people and then providing them the time and space. And I think that's really where it comes down to, where I see a lot of policies coming down where it's like, they can't say that you can't post, but you can't do it on like company software or company time or institutional time. And that's where I've seen most of the concern that I've seen, where it's like, you can do this out of your hours, you know, like thinking that you can't schedule post on LinkedIn. Like, come on, people. But like, you know, like that's the time and space, is like giving them and seeing that part of their job as opposed to that add-on or that extra thing for those employees. We don't need to ask institutional employees to do one more thing on top of the 10 other things that they've been asked to do on top of their usual day job.
And depending on the role that you have at your institution, you're probably not, the higher you get, you're probably not a 9-to-5, or you don't step into the office 9 o'clock and leave at 5, right? I mean, it's like these days, especially as we go remote, everybody's just like, for me example, I'm out there working at 10 o'clock on something for work, but I'm posting about on 11 o'clock for something for my personal page, or during lunchtime holding a book club, of all things. You know, it's all intermixed these days. I have that work-life integration that I'm thriving in as a creative. I don't like to be bogged down and say, hey, you sit here at a cubicle for 8 hours a day and then you can go out there and be creative again, but during this time you're only doing this for the institution. I think you get the best out of people if you give them a little bit of freedom to fly.
Yeah, and you bring up a really good point around, like, I have the same thing where it's like, when I was trying to post on LinkedIn, particularly having you know, a senior level leadership job, like that was the last thing, you know, that I was trying to get through after the kid was bed, after the family was fed, after the house was picked up for the night. And I'd be trying to write these things at like 11:30 at night, you know. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it'd come out good, or sometimes I would just fall asleep, right? You know, and for me, it's also about building that consistency. It's, again, not about having a staff member thinking that they're going to post one time and it's going to go viral on whatever platform. It's going to be a different day. No, it's usually posting about 100 times, you know, or at least 50 before you get any traction, particularly if you don't have a connection or an audience on any platform. It's about doing it 100 times, 1,000 times. You talk about your podcast and just doing that. It's a repetition of building that, builds that brand, builds that reputation, and makes all those other things around, you know, brand work, marketing work, digital ads, you know, all those things become easier once you've done the stuff, once you've done the legwork. You know, you and I are both runners. Like, you don't just go out and run a marathon. You got to do all the legwork. I mean, you can try to run a marathon, you know, but I wouldn't recommend it.
No.
Without the training.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And that brings me back to the book club that I mentioned yesterday, the Education Marketing Leader Book Club. We had a good response to it, especially when I posted after the fact, when we had like 12 people at the book club. I posted about it, and all of a sudden there were these people like, oh man, I missed it. I'm sorry. I'm going to try it next time. But I think it took the 3 years of being active on LinkedIn within the community, having 100 podcasts, to build that personal brand, to be a trusted facilitator of a book club. You know, if I would have gone out 3 years ago and said, hey, I'm starting a book club, they would have said, who is this guy? I'm not going to show up for that. But now, you know, we have that ecosystem within higher education that just is kind of a proof of concept that if you put in the work before, when there's crickets, and you continue to post, even though nobody, maybe you have lurkers looking at your mm-hmm. posts, but you don't have anybody engaging with it. But as you continue to build your personal brand and your network, you're going to get the support eventually if you do it in an authentic way that is human and not completely written by AI. I mean, you can push out 100 posts in a month if you want to with generative AI, but people can read through that.
Yeah, and I had that recently, and it's also not being too afraid to fail, you know, mm-hmm. and not give up when, like, there's crickets. You know, we mm-hmm. recently had this, you know, Blue Sky had this moment right after the election, and a lot of people were joining, and everybody's like, it's going to take off. And I'm like, is it really going to take off? But I've kept at it. You know, there's a tiny following. There's a tiny number of financial aid people. We've, back in the day, if for those old school Twitter people around EM chat, you know, we tried to redo that. And we've had some success in that. But then right before the holidays, we had one, and it was just like myself and the moderator. And we can see that as like, give this up. You know, in January, we're quitting this. We're still back at it. Who knows if it's going to take off? Again, it's about that repetition or about building that muscle and not being afraid of, like, you know, similar if you're a runner or something like that. You go out and you have really bad runs. Like, sometimes you just have to stop, you know, at least I. Maybe Chris, you don't do that. But I do that a lot where it's like I just have to stop some days and I just give up and walk home. Those are the ones I don't post on Strava, don't post on Instagram. But that's a different subject for a different day. But it's really about not being afraid of that failure. And so you could launch that book club and maybe it's just Chris showing up. You know, it didn't happen, but maybe it is. And then the question is like, okay, is it not the right time, not the right place? You know, we're not ready to delivery. Those are the questions to be asking at that time. And the same thing is for the institutions is like, let's try some things. Let's not be so afraid and shut down and like hunker down so much that we're getting nothing out of this. Let's try. We're going to have some mistakes. We're going to maybe even have some failures, but we're going to learn from it. We're going to go on. We're going to build from that. And we're going to correct and ask those questions. I think that's the key for institutions to be really successful in this space where people are looking for the humanity. They're not looking for perfection, I can tell you that.
Absolutely not. Talking about giving up runs, I have a funny story, and you will appreciate that. As somebody who lives in the San Francisco Bay Area, a couple of years ago, I stayed at Union Square, and I took a morning run. I ran down to the Financial District, all the way from the Embarcadero to the Fisherman's Wharf to Golden Gate Bridge and back. At Fisherman's Wharf, my hamstring started acting up, and I couldn't make it back above the hill or over the hill to go to Union Square. And it was maybe a mile, and I called an Uber. I said, this is it, man. I'm going to pop a hamstring if I'm going to try to go through that. So I did give up on that day, but, you know, I thought it was still a, a good run overall, and I went back at it a couple of days later. So,
yeah, no and you got a great view out of that run, no matter what. So,
yeah, 100%. And I came from Florida at that time, so there are no hills in Florida, right? And I go to San Francisco, and it's like getting hit in the face with those hills everywhere. But, let's talk about some examples, maybe some case studies or something you can remember from your time at California College of the Arts or through your consulting work, where staff voices have had made a positive impact on institutions' perception or enrollment, even.
I think in my conversations with people where we're seeing institutions really be okay playing in the space, you're seeing those voices created more and more, and they're having the added benefit. It could be, you know, particularly like LinkedIn, there's not a lot of 16-year-olds currently hanging out on LinkedIn, at least I haven't found them yet if they are there, but it's building those connections. And what I'm seeing, particularly on LinkedIn these days, is colleagues at an institution who are posting about, you know, take my background in financial aid. Somebody's talking about, you know, the latest data filing that they had to do with the Department of Education, and they're getting help on LinkedIn. Mm. You know, they're both building a brand for their institution, but they're also opening themselves up and said, I just got a bunch of errors, like WTF. Yeah, that's probably the language they used on LinkedIn, is like, and they're getting colleagues that are connections that they've met at a conference previously or a training, or they've never met in person ever in their career. And they're like, oh, I did this and I tried this. I just saw that on LinkedIn. You see that on Instagram or the video platforms like TikTok or YouTube or Shorts or something like that, where people are going out there and really finding the authenticity, particularly like from an art and design perspective, where it's such a creative, you know, visual space, you know, to actually be able to see what's happening inside of there. I always said when I was working at an art and design school is, you know, all we had to do was get students on campus. You know, once we show them the cool spaces, the facilities, like, and this happens for not just in art and design schools, you see this across the board. Once you get the students on campus, the problem is getting students on campus is hard. You know, it's always been hard, but it, particularly these days, going through the global pandemic, less people are traveling, people are doing their travel more the extended side of their enrollment marketing decision versus like just trying to figure out like what schools are even applying to. You're trying to figure out a way to authentically show them, and they can see, you know, the glossy, cool, you know, videos of the dorms or the cafeteria or the campus with the voiceovers and the music, and those are important. Don't get me wrong, like those play a vital part. They can't just say, oh, just get rid of them. We don't need to do them anymore. But they're really looking for those day in the lives. So they're really looking for that, hey, I'm studying at, you know, 10 o'clock tonight, or I'm working in the shop or the studio. Like they're seeing it from students. And these students are not necessarily even supported yet by the institution, but the ones that are given that support, given that training, giving that insight, and that little bit of support, not in a script, not sitting in front of necessarily that camera, but they're given that little bit of support, or their faculty. I've seen this really interesting is when the faculty are talking about how people manage their careers. Yeah, and be able to talk about their careers. And when that moves into those college age students and you start seeing those glimmers of hope, things start happening for those students. People start reaching out. You know, people start, you know, offering them internships. People start like asking them, you know, for, you know, additional ideas or creation. Like they're getting this input in there. And again, it doesn't happen on the first post. Probably doesn't even happen on the 50th post. But once they start building this repetition, I've been seeing it within, you know, and that then plays into their careers. That informs who their connections are, who their networks are. And it's in a very low stakes, mostly, kind of way. And the added benefit to the institution is all of that free marketing, all of that free authenticity. Yeah. And so the question for institutions is how do you actually build more support? Because for by and large, it's free. Yeah, you just have to have the right frameworks and the right mindset to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you said support, sometimes a simple word of encouragement can go a long way and give that person that extra jolt when they feel discouraged about their post not being interacted with, to just continue and keep going. Even after 1,000 posts, you still get a little bit of that feeling when you have one that doesn't get as much traction. You're like, ooh, is this really worth it? Do people not care anymore? And then you get a little bit of encouragement from somebody in your community, and then you feel like, hey, if I make a difference in one person's life with that post, I think I've done a good job for the day.
Yeah, the thing that I liked the most on my time on campus was I would see you know, some students post on Instagram or something like that of the work they were doing. And we were a small school. So I happened to run into them a few days later and I mentioned that I saw it and I said, that's great work. And they're like this high uppity up, you know, administrative person or something like that, that they've probably seen on a screen or talking in front of a big audience. They're like, wait, you saw my Instagram post? And not in like a creepy way, but like they're obviously a professional Instagram post. You're not following their personal accounts or something like that. But like they're like amazed. And then I saw them posting more. Yeah. You know? Mm-hmm. And like that type of encouragement from institutions where it's that authenticity that you're actually giving into those spaces, it goes a long way for those students and say, oh, somebody's listening, and not a way that's how the digital translates into the physical world.
What's your word of encouragement to institutional leaders who are hesitant to let their staff share their stories on social media, and how can they reframe it?
I think you have two choices. You can either try and be open to possibly things going not as perfectly as you planned, in both the positive and the negative. Like, it doesn't always have to be negative. Maybe it explodes and goes hugely in a different way, in a positive way. You can either try, or we can continue to try to beat our heads against this idea that we're somehow going to magically change the trust factor that is currently, and the trust that is currently instilled in higher education. You can't keep explaining your way out of this. You have to really demonstrate it in all the ways that institutions need to come up. And we can point our fingers at everybody else outside of our institutions and say, well, they just need to change. Really, the first thing you have to do is point your finger back at yourself and say, all right, what can we do differently, and how can we try in different ways to really engage our communities, which higher education is purposely built to serve, and we need to show up to serve those communities, whatever shape those communities might be, whether or not they're your local community, your national community, or different sets of students, families, and stakeholders as well.
That's good encouragement. That's good insights. A couple of months ago, I interviewed the president of Walsh University out of Ohio, Tim Collins. And the reason why I interviewed him is because I came across a YouTube video of his promoting his university in a very entertaining and funny and authentic way. And I reached out to him and I said, we scheduled an episode on how to get your university president to collaborate with marketing. Really great, insightful episode where he basically tells us about what higher level leaders in higher education have a completely packed schedule expect and how they can be set up for success. It's one of the episodes that I posted and I thought it was so insightful. And I think anybody who's on the fence when things, hey, this is not worth it, check out that episode, because if a president of a university is actively engaging with marketing to promote their college and university to be relatable to those 17 and 18-year-olds, I think everybody should give this a try. Scott, really great, insightful episode. Really thank you for your time here and sharing your wisdom. Tell us a little bit about your venture, what you got going on right now, and how people can get in touch with you.
Yeah, the best way to get in touch with me is certainly on LinkedIn. I'm probably the most active there. You can also reach me on my website, scottkline.org. I could never steal .com for some reason. I'm still trying to this day. And what I'm doing right now is, after 20 years on the institutional side as an executive leader in higher education, I've gone independent, being a consultant. So I'm working on a variety of projects, from consulting projects to advisory work to what I really am excited in many ways about is like executive coaching for middle management as well. And I'm starting to launch that as well. So if you're somebody who's not at that top, you know, I love those people who are at the top. They need all the skills, all the training, all the support they can possibly get. But I'm really interested in that middle group of managers, those up and coming leaders as well. And so I'm doing more and more coaching with that middle management group as well. And then, you know, I happen to write on LinkedIn and talk on the internet occasionally and see what people say.
Awesome. Well, Scott, thank you very much. I'll be sure to tag you in the show notes so people can connect with you easily there. Other than that, I really appreciate your time. Like I said, I'm going to publish this episode in a couple of weeks and hope you have a good new year. Take care.
Sounds good. And look forward. One final plug. Get on that book club, everybody.
Let's do it. See you there, friend.
Thanks so much, Chris. Good to talk to you.
You too. Hey everyone, thank you so much for tuning into the show and sticking with me to the end. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to subscribe to the Education Marketing Leader and share it with your friends and your network. This episode was brought to you by Scribasound Podcast Production. It's one of my ventures. If you ever thought about starting your own podcast, be sure to reach out to me. I would love to help. You follow the show and tune in every other Thursday as I interview higher ed marketing leaders for your benefit. I see you next time. Have a good day, friends. Take care.